Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 59th episode of Slam Fire Radio. For the week of May 30th, 2014, I am one of your hosts, Trevor Furlott.
I'm another one of your hosts, Matthew McClatchy.
And I'm another one of your hosts, Owen Llewellyn.
You're back, like the second week in a row.
I know, this must be a record.
No, it's not, but I pretend to be excited for you.
Pretty soon I will recognize the sound of your voice again. I won't think you're a stranger when you show up to the call.
I'm here. It's
great.
Awesome. Well, since you're back, Owen, why don't you regale us? That's my favorite word, regale. No, us, actually, is the word of the day, us. Why don't you regale us with tales of gun tomfoolery and shenanigans throughout this past week? In other words, why don't you tell us what you did with guns this week?
Very serious week with guns. I actually went to the range a couple times for the sole purpose of shooting my handgun, and dead serious about it. There was none of this just shooting for fun, no fooling around. I was at the range all by myself, no one else there. Put up some IPSC targets, have my timer with me, and shoot.
Forgot the gun.
I had the gun. I had everything. I had an entire ammo can full of ammo, which I went almost halfway through. And I can't figure out what I'm doing wrong. First of all, I'm really struggling trying to get used to these new sights.
Oh.
Because, as you know, my old sights, the factory Glock sights, for whatever reason, with my firearm, I had to put the front dot almost halfway gone into the rear sight.
Yeah, you had to bury it to the notch.
Oh, just bury it, just in order to get the gun not to shoot high.
Yep.
Well, now the problem, of course, I did that for a year and how many thousand rounds.
Yep.
And my new sights are completely the opposite. And I am now having a very difficult time when I come up and take my sight picture, I drop that front dot right down in the bottom of the rear notch. So I'm shooting low.
So you how low? Fix it?
Well, a few, like, I don't know, maybe like 4 or 5 inches.
Oh, at what distance?
10 yards.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's low.
Have you tried benching the gun with the proper sight alignment?
I shoot worse when I bench the guns. I don't know why.
Well, okay, you're doing it wrong. That's why.
Maybe. Maybe.
Okay, first of all, you need to take you out of the equation to find out where the sights are hitting, and then reintroduce you into the equation and adjust accordingly. They may be hitting low all by themselves.
No. I think it is, because if I consciously do it, make sure my sight alignment is perfect and fire, it goes
where you want it to?
It goes where I want it to.
So you have your answer.
Except I shoot to the left. Now, the sights could be slightly off to the left.
Yep.
I think that it's a distinct
Well, you did install them with the factory sight pusher from Glock, didn't you?
No,
Or
didn't.
Wait, was it a hammer, an anvil, and a brass punch? I don't remember which.
Was it a brass punch?
it might not have been.
I think it was a steel punch. But anyway.
Owen, I don't see too many Glocks not shoot left out of the box.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yep.
So maybe it's not as much me as I think.
Yeah, I would say so. If you're dry firing, Owen, and you're not moving the sight out of the notch during dry fire, then unless you've developed some kind of bad flinch, and you can test for that too, have one of us load your mags and real round, dummy round, we'll see if you've got a flinch or not.
Yeah.
If you're dry firing and your sight picture's not moving, your front post not coming out of the notch, then chances are you've been shooting long enough, it's not going to come out while you're actually shooting live ammo. And I've seen your grip and I've seen your stance, and they're all excellent. So I would I'm willing to bet it's the sights that need to be adjusted, not the Owen.
Because I out of 100 rounds I put into a target, there was not a single one on the right side of center.
Yeah, yeah, your sights are definitely off then, or your finger's not right on the trigger, or there's some sort of fence going on.
Because I was playing around with stuff. I was like, okay, I've got to fix this. So maybe it's my finger. So I start right. I was shooting with my finger almost to my first knuckle. No difference. The only thing I could get that changed it, and tell me if this is correct or not. I was almost wondering if I'm getting too good of a grip on my gun.
Well, yes.
Here's what I was doing, and here's what I changed near the end. When I was reaching down towards my holster, and I'm placing, you know, the web between my thumb and my first finger up into the
throat.
The pad of your thumb, but on the other side of your hand, the heel of your hand,
mm-hmm.
is on the back at the bottom, right, of the grip.
Mm-hmm.
It draws out, and of course everything else goes in exactly as it should be. That feels really good, feels very solid, very secure. Now, every time I did that, I was shooting very much to the left. If I took a grip where now my that same pad that's on the directly on the back is now slightly off to the side, so that if I was holding my first grip and I take a shooting position, you can't see any of the back of the gun, of the grip, from my perspective. Now when I take my second grip, you can just see a slight portion of the rear left-hand side of the grip.
With just one hand, not with two hands.
With two hands.
Oh, with two hands.
I can just see a little
very
corner.
Slight gap there.
Just a little, a little corner on the back. But before my hand was covering that, and now it's not.
Now, did that change the point of impact?
Yep.
I started shooting straight at that point. Now, my group wasn't as tight, but I was shooting. It centered it up.
Now, okay. Your right hand, of course, is important, but it's not actually as important as your left hand. But the mm-hmm. where you put your right hand on the grip will affect the pressure that you put on the grip. Like in archery, we used to call it healing the bow. If you had too much of the palm of your hand.
That's when you smacked it in the forehead and said, "You're healed," and it fell down.
No, that's not. You would be pushing the grip of the bow depending on which part of your hand was contacting the grip of the bow. Well, a gun's going to do the same thing. You can steer the gun with the palm of your hand. So if you change
That's what I was wondering if because of the way I was gripping when it fired, it was actually twisting. My hand had a natural twist.
Kind of how you're. It's the pressure that's into the gun right from the get-go throughout the trigger pull. And that's why with the left hand, we compensate. You kind of just pull the trigger with your right hand and steer and grip the gun with your left hand. And if you're forcing too much to the left with your right hand, your left hand will compensate and kind of straighten things out and keep the bullets to the center. Or even if you grip too much with the left hand, you're going to throw them to the right possibly. So changing your right hand is going to change your point of impact. But that's why we shoot for groups. Keep your grip consistent, shoot for groups, and then adjust your sights to move your group to the center of the target. So pick one of those, whichever one. I mean, when you put the right hand in the gun, the idea is to have it so that everything lines up through the wrist into the bones in the forearm so that there's no break in that joint and you're not putting, you know, when the gun recoils, it's pushing against your wrist and flexing it one way or the other. It's supposed to recoil through the wrist into the bones of the forearm so it's bone on bone, right? That's what you want to go for with your grip so that all the recoil goes straight back into your elbow and then support it with your support hand and then adjust your sights.
Yeah, if you're shooting bigger groups with your adjusted grip, I would go back to your first grip, which is what you've learned anyway, and just simply adjust your sights a bit.
Yeah, because you were very, very consistent. Yeah, it was left, but it was consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
Yeah,
anyway, I'm going
put
to...
Put it on the bench too, though.
Mm-hmm.
Put it on the bench and take a relaxed grip so that you're not torquing the gun, get a good sight picture, and squeeze the trigger. But a relaxed grip within reason, you have to grip the gun hard enough so that the sights aren't influenced by the trigger pull.
Exactly.
Yeah, you dry fire that too a few times. Practice how you can pull the trigger with the gun bench without moving the sights. It can be done. It does take practice. It's a skill in itself. I mean, shooting from a bench with a pistol, people think it's super easy, but to do it right, you got to do it right.
Yeah. The idea is to not influence the gun, right?
That's right. So anyway, it was a eye-opening and at the same time frustrating range time. The whole, remember, I don't know if we talked about this on the show last time or not, about my loads and them being heavy.
Yeah, being hot, yeah.
That didn't bother me at all this time. So I don't know what it was before.
First time out in a long time, you're feeling it, yeah.
I think that could be it.
Yeah.
Because I find my double taps are slow, but I don't know if that's just me or...
Those speed up throughout the season.
Yeah, so as far as other muscle memory, it was pretty good. I did, considering I'm drawing out of a duty holster, and I was doing first bullet downrange in a minute and a quarter, or a second and a quarter.
A minute and a quarter, dude.
Yeah,
speed that up.
Yeah,
that's fast. I mean, I was with all my race gear, I wasn't getting some times like that with the early practice sessions on my open gun. So yeah, that's good. I was getting. I was getting 1.16 when I...
Yeah.
No, I got some 1.6. So almost a second and a half to get my first shot on target.
Mm. Yeah. No, I was... I mean, it took me a couple dry runs to get warmed up again, but it was one second and a quarter, and then a double tap was just over a second and a half or something like that. So,
those are decent. Not,
you know, I was okay with that.
And you should be.
So yeah, but it was fun. I spent a couple hours at the range two different times and just put a lot of ammunition down range. You know, it was I must have put 400 rounds last time.
Nice.
Just trying to get myself back in the swing of it.
That's why the recoil is not bothering you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll tell you, my arm was some sore. My forearm was some worn out that night. No, it was fun. So that's about it. I haven't done much else other than that.
How about you, McClatchy?
I didn't do anything. No. I had a really bad throat infection all week, feverish, and on my back for 3 days in a row. So kind of figured I should stay home, not go to the range or work for that matter. So yeah, I'm recovering, and I hope to get out the next couple of days and go do some pistol shooting. But no solid plans yet.
Cool.
You?
Oh, brother. Nonstop. We taught a black badge on Friday night. We did the classroom portion as Harold and Jason McIntyre and myself were the primary instructors. A little bit of help from other people who showed up at the range next day. We had four candidates, three men and one 13-year-old girl, Harold's daughter, and... Harold shoots Glock 35, and gosh darn it, so is everyone else. So everybody out there is going, 13-year-old girl, Glock 35? What? Yeah, forget it. She even beat some of the guys.
Nice.
She can handle it. You know, we always say, don't start a girl on a gun that's too big, blah, 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 blah. If they can shoot it, let them shoot it. That's my new philosophy. And, dude, she can shoot it.
Yeah, don't start them out on it. I'm sure this isn't the first gun she's ever shot.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. This is she started on. It's the only handgun she's ever shot.
Oh, fantastic.
I don't know if she shot a 9mm before.
Huh.
So I walked by her. She was she was getting all alpha hits. And I walked by her, and a couple of the guys are shooting 9mm. And I said to her, I looked at her target. So you having fun? She goes, oh, yeah, I'm having lots of fun. I fist bumped her. I said, look at those guys. They're shooting 9mm. Isn't it cute? Nice. Yeah, she loved it. So anyway, best black badge class that I've been a part of so far. They came. I was pretty apprehensive at first because I was getting no communication. I sent out constant emails and I annoy people. Are you ready? Do you need something? Is your test done? Do you have any questions? Well, they came in. What I really liked, and Woodstock was good too, Owen, because those boys had all their own gear and were ready when the class started. Last year was a travesty. I'll use that word. People were had no intentions of getting gun licenses. They were borrowing gear. It was, they had never shot a gun until the day of the course. I was just beside myself over that whole situation. But this year, everybody who came out had their own gear. They had their gun licenses. They had their fancy IPSC belts. They were there to shoot a black badge because they wanted to compete in the sport of IPSC. So it made a difference. And having only four people in class also made a difference. Yeah. We shot the match the next day on Sunday. We put in seven or eight stages. Good time. I struggled big time. I didn't realize that the battery in my Seymour sight was all but dead. There's one stage in particular. I put the video on Facebook. It was the maze.
I think both Matthew and I were screaming, "Point shooting! Point shooting!"
Yep. Yeah. You know, and to all the Mall Ninjas out there that were giving comments about, "This is why I only use irons." You know what I say? Bugger off. IPSC's a game and I'm playing with a toy gun.
No, that's absolutely fine. And that, more power to you. Go nuts. Shoot your red dot. Have lots of fun with it.
Yeah.
Point shoot, though.
No.
No.
How can I learn to use my dot if I point shoot?
No, and see, what I was thinking, use the experience to practice what would happen in a real match.
Yeah,
I know it was a real match, but what if this was a level three and this happened?
Yeah, one thing, exactly. This is the first match I ever shot with a gun.
Right.
Right? One thing at a time. Eventually, I will be training with the dot off. I need to be able to index the gun and get hits on target out to 10 meters with the dot off.
Right.
So I know what to expect when it happens. But for the first match.
You're right. Yeah. I forgot this was your first match. That makes more sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And let's remember how many guys were in open. Me.
So did you get the first place in open?
I did.
Imagine. Yeah.
So I draw the gun. I run to the side of the stage and there's some targets like 3 meters. They're right there. 31 seconds go by before I take my first shot. It was brutal. James Story was like, "I couldn't watch the video. Please somebody tell me he started to shoot eventually." Anyway, and then I got some S&J hardware stuff from Luc Giroux from Bang Switch Boutique. So I did some work on my 870 and my 590. I got one of the single point sling mounts for my 870. I tried to install it, but it just a little too wide to go between the receiver and the Magpul stock. So the bolt that holds the Magpul stock on the receiver is too short. So Luke's getting me another one. So that's awful kind of him. And then he gave me a no jam follower for my 590 and a jumbo safety. I removed the factory safety and promptly lost the ball bearing for the detent. So that was fun. So my 590 is out of commission right now because it's safety-less. And Jeff Reese, of course, he came to the rescue at the Calgary Shooting Center. He found one. And I think Luke is getting one. So I'll have a spare in case this ever happens again. Then I installed that Tosco red dot that I got back from you, Matthew. Yeah. I installed that on my new Daniel Defense Mark 18. So, yeah, I got a new Mark 18 AR-15 rifle. There's that.
There's that, yeah. I got a new AR, whatever. Yeah.
I put on Facebook that there was 200 rounds through it. Nene. I gave the guy who bought it 200 rounds, and he didn't use them. Because when I got the gun back, I got some of the ammo back. He used 40. So the gun has had 40 rounds shot through it.
And I got probably it just about wore out then. Probably time for a new barrel.
Yeah. Just send it down here. I like old guns that are all beat up and used up.
Okay. No problem. I'll do that on the 7th of never. So,
October the 32nd.
I put the red dot on it. I put the Magpul forward sling mount and the Magpul ambidextrous rear sling mount. And I put on a AccuShot monopod that also works as a front vertical grip. You can fold it up and it makes kind of like an AFG from Magpul.
Mm-hmm.
Drop the button and then you've got a vertical grip. So I like it. I think it might be too far forward because if I see where my hand is in relation to the ports on the flash hider.
You don't want them too close to that.
Yeah, I'm undecided. I might just, if I get burned, I'll move it. If I don't, I won't. Right?
There you go. That'll work.
So anyway, no, I think it needs to go back. But it's got the Magpul ladder rails on there, so I might have to trim one and move it back one notch. So
right.
What else did I do? Oh, the aluminum grip on my open gun broke again.
What? That's only the third time that's ever happened ever.
Yeah, apparently. So the new one arrived today. They're under warranty. So Sean at Freedom Ventures, huge shout out, man. They drop them in the mail every time they break right away. So, I mean, no, it's not a reflection on Freedom Ventures. It's a reflection on STI's aluminum grip design. I'm looking at it, and it'll just be a matter of time before this one cracks again. As long as STI wants to keep sending them to me, I'll keep installing them and keep cracking them until they fix the problem. They crack right behind the, not the front of the trigger guard, but the back of the trigger opening on the gun, kind of above the magazine release. It almost looks like they make a mistake in the milling process, and they put a sharp edge in there, which kind of gives a crack a perfect place to start. That, and yep, it's paper thin in that point. So that's where they're cracking. So anyway, I put the plastic one on, got it to the range, shot it once, and the next day the aluminum one came in. So that was kind of pointless. I just should have waited. I didn't know it was going to be here in 3 days. But that's Freedom Ventures for you. They don't mess around when it comes to customer service. And then before I shot the gun that day, when I got to the range, there was a gentleman there shooting a Savage 110 BA or BA 110, whichever it is, in 338 Lapua. And he also had a Steyr HS50 M1, which he let me shoot. So
it's a 50 BMG.
Yeah, EA for me, I shot a 50 BMG.
The big one.
And then he broke the bolt on it yesterday.
Oh. Yeah, I was just going to ask, maybe he could bring that out to the charity shoot, and we could like auction off rounds of 50 BMG for people who wanted to shoot it, but since he broke the bolt, I guess maybe we won't do that.
Well, if you wouldn't have interrupted as fast as you normally do, you'd know that I was about to say he got it fixed.
Oh, good for him. Maybe he could bring that out to the charity shoot, and we could like auction off rounds for people to shoot if they want to shoot a 50 BMG.
That's a wonderful suggestion. I will run it by him.
That's a great idea.
And I tell you what, he may be open to the idea, because the gun will be on hand this Saturday morning at the Balmoral Festival shoot.
Oh, very cool.
With the intent of allowing people to shoot it for a fee. So,
yeah, I think he should totally come out. And then... Yeah. I was going to say, then he could donate all that money to Laurentide's Autism Foundation. or maybe he could use it to buy more 50 BMG rounds. I don't know. Yeah, it's his choice, I guess.
Yeah. So what happened was, he got a round that was 20 thou too long, and it jammed in the chamber.
Uh-huh.
And he hit the bolt so hard that he broke the bolt handle off.
Goodness. That'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's That's a good right guy, on. I guess.
He broke the bolt handle on a 50 BMG.
Don't mess with this guy. I can clearly see.
Because if his 50 BMG breaks, he'll just beat you.
Yeah.
Break your bolt handle off.
Break your head off.
And finally, last but not least, the reason for all my recent stress in my life is Salsh has stepped down as match director for SummerSlam. And... I've been appointed by him. I don't think I was even given a choice. So I'm the match director for SummerSlam, and we had our first organizing committee meeting tonight. I had already been doing work all along for SummerSlam because I was the administrator. I thought I was just in charge of registration, but that was code for your administration and anything else I need. Duties to be assigned as necessary was the fine print. Yeah. So anyway, I was doing the registration, and we did the squatting, and now I've got to do all that and the master director job. So we had a meeting tonight to see where we are, where we need to go, what's left to do, and try and organize the troops to get things done. And I'm scared to death. Every time I would say, who wants to take this?
Crickets.
You got it.
Nice.
Yeah. So it'll be what it'll be.
Yep.
Yeah, that's all it'll be. So, you know, the stages are all designed. They've been submitted. We've got our sanctioning. What stresses me out is the building, right? Like,
yeah.
The stages for June 7th and June 8th for the two matches that I'm like I'm going to be teaching a black badge in Miramichi the weekend of June. I'll go down Friday, June 6th. So I won't be around to be the match director here. And I designed the stages and they're ready to go. But who's going to step up and help me build them and then be the match director and the range master? I don't know. I'll be in the Miramichi and nobody's stepped up yet. So. You know, I can't be here, but at least the stages are here. Go build them.
Yeah.
Or I'll even help you build them. But somebody's got to run it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, eh? I mean, you got a bunch of IPSC shooters there. If they want the match to happen, somebody will step up and do it. Otherwise, match won't happen. You know, it's not rocket science.
The thing about the Rescuers Gun Club is there are a ton of incredibly hard workers and an excellent group of volunteers. but there have only been a small handful of leaders, and I do mean small, like two or three people have taken on leadership roles throughout the years, and it's always been the same people. And the leaders have been happy with that, and the people that have been helping them happy with that. And when those leaders leave, nobody else seems to step up, I guess. I don't know.
Somebody will. The void will be filled eventually.
Yep. But with Sal stepping down, the backbone of the Rescuers Gun Club is essentially broken for the time being. Though you know, if anybody's replaceable, I'm sorry. No one is ever going to fill that man's shoes. No one's ever going to put into it what he put into it. People will step up and think the matches will continue and SummerSlams will continue and all that's fine and well, but nobody's going to bring to it what he brought to it because nobody is that insane. Right. Lead follower get run over. I mean, the guy is a tank. He's a Tasmanian devil. I mean, just go. I've never seen the likes. And in sometimes you wonder if it's going to happen, but in the end, it not only does it happen, it happens. With so anyway, I'm you know, I don't want to be the next Sal Noel. I'm gonna help out. I don't even know yet if I'll be match director for SummerSlam next year. I'm stepping in because I'm already in an administrative role as it is, and he asked me to do it. But you know, the pistol section is going to need a new coordinator, and our section up here for IPSC is going to need a new section coordinator. Nobody's asked me to do those yet, and I think I'm okay with that. I mean, if I do, you can't fill those shoes. And if I take those jobs, I certainly hope nobody expects me to do the things that he did the way he did them. You know, if somebody says, well, Sal, you should do it this way, my answer is going to be, I'm not him and don't want to be him.
Yes, exactly.
So, anyhow, that's it for me, gentlemen. Well, I got to talk about what I did and throw a little bit of whining in there.
That's fantastic. I might edit all that out. I'm just kidding. No, I might not be. But anyway.
Probably should. Let's move on.
All right.
Oh, yeah, I'm the lead host, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
All right. So next we're going to go into upcoming events.
Yes.
All right. What are we doing with this flyer thing? We had lots of people posted. Are we going to pick somebody? How long is this going on for?
We didn't pick a date.
Okay, so it's indefinitely. Keep posting our flyer. 4th annual charity shoot will take place at the Rescuers Gun Club on June 28th at 9 a.m. Be there a little bit before so we can get you registered. The registration fee is $25, all of which will be donated to the Lauren Tides Autism Foundation. And please RSVP through Facebook or email so we know how much food to buy. The acoustic concert with Mr. Lee will now be moved to my home. There will be no ribs, but there will be a barbecue on hand for you to use. So bring your refreshments and bring something for the grill. Versamax draw ongoing. Only 1,000 tickets being sold. You can get your tickets through email by sending an EMT to the restigushgunclub@gmail.com. They're 3 for $20 or $10 a piece. Please remember to send a follow-up email with your name, address, telephone number, and the password. Practical Arms Response Academy shooting course with MAG 40 instructor Tommy Nelson of Gun Dudes fame. August 2nd and 3rd, we have 2 spots left. $200 now guarantees you a spot. If you need to cancel and receive a refund, you need to do so before the 1st of July. Multi-gun will take place at the Rescuers Gun Club August 16th and 17th. $40. Pre-registration is required. 12 stages, 6 a day. All kinds of happy time goodness with the 3 guns. Thunderbird Tactical Carbine Clinic will take place in October on the 11th. We have 2 spots. Also $200. Also money is due now, but cancellation for that one for before or without penalty is September 1st. The Spring Swiss Arms Fork It Over fundraiser will take place on June 21st. For more information, location, times, etc., go to chrisandersonpresents.com.
Cool. Right. All right then. News.
Yes. You want to take the first one, Matthew?
There is only one. I will take it.
All right then.
Weapons stolen from Southeast Calgary gun range. Police are investigating after several weapons were stolen from the Shooting Edge in Calgary. Police rushed to the store Monday morning when the owner arrived to find someone had broken into the store through a window. Police believe it happened sometime after midnight. More than 20 weapons were stolen. However, investigators say that number may increase once the store's inventory has been reviewed. Meanwhile, police are also reviewing a similar incident that occurred just 2 weeks ago on May 11th. Somebody forced their way into the main door, then used a baseball bat to smash open a display case and stole 11 handguns. So it's bad luck for the Shooting Edge in Calgary, it sounds like. Yeah, I don't know if they need to install armed guards, maybe a sentry, you know, one of them automated...
Sentry gun.
A sentry gun, maybe RoboCop. What was the BF-2000? No, what was the RoboCop droid that they...
Oh, yeah, the drone.
ED-2000 or whatever, I forget. Anyway, yeah, they need one of them.
Yep.
That'd be cool.
Cool. All right. Why don't we jump into our main topic?
Let's do that.
So our main topic this week, actually what we're going to do is address a couple of emails. It's very cool that I got a new air for this week's show, because this week's main topic is all about our favorite black rifle at Slamfire Radio, the Air 15. So we're just going to go through our main topic by addressing some of the questions in the following two emails. And the first one comes to us from Brian. And Brian says, "Hello, gentlemen. I have been meaning to write to you for some time now, but just never seemed to get around to it. Since I had a few minutes in front of the computer, I thought I might as well say hello. Hello.
Hello.
I've been listening to your podcast since the beginning. We're sorry.
We're sorry.
And while I'm currently not up to date, well, then you're not hearing this right now, are you? I really enjoy the content of your shows on my long drives to work. And we probably make that drive feel a little bit longer. Out here in the bush, the radio ends at the town limits, so you're a great companion while on the road. Because of your show, I recently joined the NFA.
Woohoo! Good for you.
Oh, that's something else I did. I attended my first NFA conference call. Nothing really exciting to talk about other than I attended my first NFA conference call. thank you for your constant push to join. I never realized the benefits the NFA is to shoot. I never realized the benefits the NFA provides to shooters. In a recent Facebook post, the NFA mentioned that one of the upcoming gun-related government proposals was to declassify AR to non-restricted. This has piqued my interest in the AR. Before, it seemed pointless as it could only be shot at a range, and my gun club is just a basic shooting range firing line with 50, 75, and 100-meter targets. The cost of the rifle, the restricted status, and the finickiness made it seem pointless. Granted, the only experience I have with the AR is from listening to your podcast, and I realize as you are all avid competition shooters, avid, and that the constant, I can't see my red dot, and that the constant down and rebuilding of the platform is to try and give you a better edge. The constant takedown and rebuilding of the platform is to try and give you a better edge. Still, it seems as though it requires a lot of time and effort to have an AR run effectively. Perhaps you can dedicate some time to the AR for people not familiar with the platform. Thanks, and keep up the good work. Brian in Grand Cache, Alberta." Well, Brian, finicky? Have we been whining about our AIRs, guys? Have we been saying that we have issues?
I think maybe he's referring to my issues that I had with mine when I first put it together with that really short barrel.
Right.
How it didn't group very well, and I was always messing around trying to get that a little bit better. I wonder if that was it because, well, although, Owen, you've complained about yours before, the mag well being out of spec with your mags falling out. So
yeah,
I guess
but,
that
and,
would...
And Trevor's done a lot of rebuilding of his for his competition guns and... Swapping
out barrels. And, yeah,
true,
I can,
but not for any other reason other than to try and increase performance. I've not had any issues with any of my guns being out of spec or not being reliable. Or, you know, there's been no malfunctions in any of my AR. I've never had a malfunction. I've never had a stoppage whatsoever.
Yeah. No, and again, aside from my out of spec Magwell, I've not really had any issues either. And it should be noted that you are by far the competitive shooter of the three of us. You know, I have my equipment, but it is not set up for, for competition.
Yeah, where I run more competition gear, you run more duty gear.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And our ARs reflect that. Now, my new AR, my Mark 18, that'll probably never see a match. I'm going to run it in the Daniel Shaw course because, you know, we're going to
wait, Daniel could run it the Daniel Shaw course because he needs an AR.
Daniel can run my NEA or he can run one of
into the Daniel defense. It's perfect.
Daniel should really run the Daniel defense. I'm just saying.
Not happening.
It's got his name on it. I'm so.
Oh, so what Trevor is saying is he is going to be Daniel's defense.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. Daniel's going to get a stick with a handle taped to it. So,
well, before we get going too far there, actually, let's talk about the AR itself. I mean, not everybody knows. We say AR a lot, but not a lot of people, they may not know what AR even is.
First of all, it stands for automatic rifle.
No, assault rifle. Come on, Joseph.
Assault rifle.
Right. It actually stands for Armalite, but that's not even where I'm going with this. I just want people to picture the Vietnam War and the M16. That's basically what the AR-15 is. It's not that same gun, but it's cosmetically identical. It just doesn't have the fully automatic feature. It's just a regular semi-automatic rifle, but it looks just like the M16 from the Vietnam War. So now, if you didn't know what we meant when we said AR or AR-15, that is the type of rifle we're talking about.
At best, I would say it's loosely based on that.
Okay. When I'm saying it looks like it, I'm talking about people who don't know what an AR is. If they didn't know, if they had no picture in their head.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
They've only ever handled Grandpappy's bolt action or lever action hunting rifle.
Yeah, then that's what we're talking about. That being said, the AR-15 is a restricted rifle in Canada, meaning that we can only shoot it at the range, but it is a rifle that we can legally own, and there are several thousand of them in Canada. They are not black, scary assault rifles that the media would have you believe. They are modern sporting rifles. They are very accurate. They are very reliable. They are very, very fun. And if you do it right, they're actually very affordable. They're not terribly expensive, especially if you get your listeners to donate all kinds of parts. You can build one for free.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
No, I heard
that happen to some guy. I don't know.
ARs are kind of like golf clubs. You can buy a set at Canadian Tire, or you can have a set made at a pro shop for you. The sky is the limit with ARs, all the way up to even putting wood on them, for crying out loud. But blasphemy. Anyway, so you can get your basic entry-level Dominion Arms or Norinco AR, which is, they're Chinese-made, but
they work well.
Yeah, everybody I know with one has had great success with them. Mo just picked one up recently for a song. It was incredible. And all the way up to, really high-end, expensive.
Yeah, several thousand dollars.
Yeah, several thousand. Yeah, easily. Yeah,
so we're talking like 800-ish for your low end.
Yep.
And 25 to 3,000 for like,
or even
high
less.
End.
Some Canada Ammo or Marstar, one of them had Norinco ARs a couple of weeks ago for $550.
Oh wow! Yeah, you can really get into this market quite easily right now. Then, so if you are looking for an
cheaper
AR,
than a handgun,
in some cases, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're looking, I mean, especially with talk that they may be, you know, turning them to non-restricted, this is a really good time to be getting into the AR market and picking one up for yourself. They are great rifles. Mm. I'm kind of with Brian here. Up until I got one basically given to me, I was in the same boat he was. I didn't want one. I wasn't really drawn to it, basically because it was a range toy. You can't hunt with it, and I like to hunt. So why would I have a gun that I can't take out in the woods? Yes, I have pistols, but you know, they're a little different. This is a rifle. Why can't I take this rifle in the woods and hunt with it? Yeah. But when I did get my own, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I could live without anything, I suppose, except oxygen and food, I guess. But
now that I have one,
I really don't want to not have one. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They are very fun, to shoot.
I figured since I'm going to the range anyway. With one restricted firearm?
Yeah, might as well bring your AR with you.
Might as well expand that repertoire, and I'm at the range anyway.
Sure. And for people who spend a lot of time at the range like you do, Trevor, as a competitive shooter, I mean, it makes perfect sense for you to own an AR and to, well, own three of them, I guess.
Yeah.
But as we were talking about earlier, you can set them up a variety of different ways. You can have them set up very, very tactically, as in combat or rugged.
Freaking lasers.
Freaking laser beams coming out of their heads. Or you light can set bulbs. Them up in a competition mode. You know, very lightweight with scopes and all kinds of crazy offset angled sights and stuff. So, you know, the sky is really the limit on how you set up your rifle as well.
Mm. Yeah, and Brian, ARs are Lego for adults. Not
they
that
really
adults
are.
Shouldn't play with real Lego. I mean, I'm all for that, but they're so modular. If you don't like the stock, you can change it. You don't like the grip, you can change it. There's so many different accessories. You can change out the triggers. You can change out the uppers. You can handguards. Oh my God, there's more handguards on the planet than people. Like it's just
that's actually a bit of hyperbole, but whatever. We'll carry
whatever.
On.
You know.
Yeah, what,
so that's the thing. And you get bored of your AR being set up one way, you dump the furniture off of it, set it up another way.
It's that easy, really.
You don't like Magpul anymore, switch to Altor. I mean,
yep.
It just doesn't stop.
Yep, and a variety of calibers. You can shoot anything from 22. The most common caliber, of course, is 5.56, which is 223, or very similar to 223. You can get them in 7.62. You can get them that 7.62x39. You can also get them in 7.62x51. You can get which is 308, or very similar to 308, of course. 7.62x39, of course, the AK-47 round. Banana clip, basically cut a man in half. You know the deal. Now, because this is a semi-automatic rifle, you are limited to 5 rounds of ammunition in your magazine if you have a
in
rifle
your
magazine.
AR-15 proprietary magazine.
That's right. If you have an AR-15 rifle magazine, 5 rounds is where the rivet will be set. You can get LAR magazines, which are pistol magazines, and we're not going to get into the semantics and the details of how that works, but let's say it very quickly that a pistol magazine in Canada is limited to 10 rounds, and there is such thing as an AR pistol. So you can have pistol magazines for the AR-15, which allows you to hold 10 rounds. And then, of course, there's the 50 Beowulf option.
Personal favorite.
The AR-15 comes... you can get an upper for it called the 50 Beowulf upper, and it's basically a 50 caliber bullet the length of a 223. And if you have a magazine designed for the 50 Beowulf where it can only hold 5 rounds of 50 Beowulf, there are some people who will put other calibers in there, say 223. And
sometimes I sure will.
You can get 14 to 15 rounds of 223 ammunition or 5.56 ammunition, and so you can legally shoot a higher number of rounds through your rifle that way. So there are options when it comes to that.
Indeed.
So, Owen, why don't you tell us about your AR? How do you have your setup?
Which one?
I don't know. Pick one. You haven't said anything for a while. I wanted to draw you into the conversation.
I see. I have. Thank you for drawing me in.
Yes.
I have a couple, of course, both NEA uppers and lowers. And I have, I guess, what I would call my battle rifle, 14.5-inch barrel with an optic and a flashlight. And, yeah, not too many crazy stuff on it.
So it's basically your rugged, combat rifle.
Exactly, and it is rugged. It has the NEA barrel, which is a heavy barrel. And... it's fairly streamlined. It's not overly complicated, but it's very, you know, it's a tool, and everything on it has a function and is set up to be ergonomic for, you know, quote unquote combat. If you want to use those terms, though, it'll probably never see combat.
Yeah, sure, but that's what hopefully. You enjoy the style.
It's,
you enjoy
it's set up. It's set up more like a duty firearm than a competition firearm.
So tell us about your competition AR, Trevor, to give listeners a bit of a contrast.
Sure. It's made by STI, and it came with a couple of accessories from the factory that make it more suitable for competition, namely a single-stage lightweight trigger. The trigger pull is about 2 pounds and single-stage, which is so far removed from a mil-spec trigger. It's unbelievable. It's like going from a truck to a Ferrari. Also has a semi-automatic bolt carrier as opposed to a fully automatic bolt carrier.
And that fully automatic bolt carrier doesn't make the gun fully automatic.
That's correct, yes.
It's just the bolt carrier is a little bit heavier than the semi-automatic one.
It came with a A2 stock, so it was fixed. I tossed that off and went to a mag pull and a buffer tube. The barrel that was on it was a match grade barrel from STI, and it came with a compensator as opposed to a flash hider. So a flash hider reduces the muzzle flash, where a compensator reduces recoil by redirecting the gas as the bullet exits the barrel, and the gun kind of recoils flatter. It pushes into you as opposed to the muzzle rising. The downside to it is you're going to get lots of flash and uber loud.
Yeah.
I then ripped that barrel off.
And gave it to me.
Yeah, almost. Well, almost. And the handguard. And yeah. I really fell in love with the look of the Stag three-gun air that they build at the factory for competition, much like this STI is. But it has a longer barrel. It has an 18.5-inch barrel. And it's, I believe, a better barrel. And it has a better two things drew me to it. It's got a better twist rate for shooting lighter bullets. And it is a actual 5.56 chambering, where my STI was a 2.23 chambering. And I'm one of those guys that believes there's a difference and doesn't want to overpressure and stress his barrel. Whatever. I don't put 5.56 in gun that is stamped 2.23. So now, by switching to this barrel, it doesn't matter what kind of ammunition I pick up. I can handle a 2.23 or I can get some 5.56. Doesn't matter. So now, all three of my AR-15s are 5.56 actual chamberings. So that's cool.
And just really quick, for the listeners who don't know, 5.56 and 2.23 are very similar, but 5.56 does produce slightly higher pressures. So it's safe to shoot 2.23 in a 5.56, but some people say it's not safe to shoot 5.56.
Yeah, Sammy. When we say some people, the Sammy specs, Sammy does not recommend interchanging those two calibers. They also don't recommend interchanging 308 and 7.62x51. But the other thing that my competition AR has at my quote unquote duty ARs would not have is it has a scope, an actual glass magnified scope with a 1-4 magnification, and it doesn't look much like a hunting scope whatsoever. And it has backup iron sights that are mounted to the rifle at a 45-degree angle. I haven't set them up yet, but the theory is that your targets that are up close, you tip the rifle to the side and use your iron sights. Because
kind of like gangster shooting your Glock.
Kind of, yeah. The idea is there's no magnification, so it's much quicker to get a sight picture rather than trying to get the proper eye relief in a scope and find your crosshairs and line them up on a target. You just tip the rifle to the side and shoot the targets quickly.
Why don't you mount a red dot on a 45 instead of
just... I am going to. The spark that I got from you, yep. I messed up a couple of screws, and they're being drilled and tapped and straightened out by Jason. So when I get that back, that spark's going to go on the rifle.
Yeah, because, of course, a red dot, you'll be able to acquire your sight picture even faster.
Even faster, yeah. Yeah. So, and I like the idea of the spark on the side of the STI AR because the spark is such a low profile, small, compact optic. It's not going to stick out the side of the rifle like a sore thumb.
Right.
So, and of course, the barrel being all the way out to 18 inches, the idea with that was if ever I get to shoot the gun in a match that has targets all the way out to 500, I feel I'll be more accurate with that barrel and that scope than I would be with a 14.5-inch barrel and a red dot. And so I'll have an advantage, hopefully, over the competition, unless everybody's shooting that kind of setup at long distances. It'll shoot excellent at short distances and excellent at long distances, where a shorter-barreled AR with a red dot will shoot great, with the right guy inside of 300. But when you want to get out past 300, I think you need to go to magnification and longer barrel.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that, if you're shooting for groups.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right.
Yeah, it should be noted I run a spark as well as my primary optic.
Right. Yeah, sparks are good optics from what I hear. I haven't experienced that yet for myself.
Well, the one that you gave me was working fine until I messed up the screws and the mounting holes, but...
Cool. I'm glad it's working. I'm personally getting an EOTech 512 for mine.
Is it on order?
No, I haven't ordered it yet. I'm getting around to ordering that soon.
I think you're going to be very happy with it.
I was very happy shooting yours. I really enjoyed it. I really like the reticle. I really like the wide angle of the glass. You can really see a lot. And I think I'm going to have a lot of fun with it. So,
why don't we, Matthew, he says finicky. Why don't we talk about some of the common problems that do occur with AR-15s and some of the things that you need to look out for?
Well, you do need to clean it.
Everything needs to be cleaned, yeah.
Owen, yeah, everything needs to be cleaned. And cleaning an AR is not difficult, contrary to what a lot of people say. It's not difficult. Very easy. The gun comes apart with the push of one pin. The rifle, it breaks basically in half, and you can pull everything out the back. Mm-hmm. Very, very easy to take apart and to clean. Let's talk about some of the malfunctions,
so,
Trevor.
Your extractor spring will wear, and you'll get poor extraction from the chamber, which will cause some stoppages with the brass not clearing.
Do we have a round count where you can expect that to start happening?
I think it would depend on the quality of the firearm,
right,
and of the parts kit, you know. But I don't have a number, no.
I would imagine several thousand rounds anyway.
I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah, wouldn't be something that's going to happen on a regular basis. This is going to happen if you're a dedicated competition shooter and probably only once a season, if that.
Yep. Right off of the bat, some of the shorter barreled ARs can have that problem. I noticed that my Mark 18 has a heavy buffer. It's stamped with an H for heavy right off of the bat, and that's to slow the cyclic rate down to give the brass time to get out of the gun, new round to get chambered.
Yeah, let's talk about cyclic rate real quick again for people who don't know. The way that the AR-15 works is there's a port drilled in the barrel, and part of the gases from the bullet being fired are redirected down this tube, which pushes against the bolt, basically. There's a bolt key, and it sends that gas directly into the chamber, and it pushes the bolt back, which allows it to cycle the next round. When you have a short barrel, that port is that much closer to the gun, to the receiver, which means that your cyclic rate, how fast the gun cycles, is very, very quick.
So you need to find a way to slow it down so the gun runs reliably. Another downside to that system is the gun basically poops where it eats. It's dumping all that hot, dirty gas right into the bolt, right?
And a lot of
the most vital place that needs to be kept clean. So this is why you have to clean and maintain your bolt carrier group and your bolt, because all that carbon is going to build up right on the bolt.
It does. It is fairly easy to keep clean as long as you do it regularly. There are people who recommend getting a piston-driven AR. I'm not one of them. I really like the simplicity of the direct impingement, the original design. It has worked for this long.
Exactly.
It's going to continue to work.
Yeah.
It does require a slight bit more maintenance, but it works and it's simple. Once you start putting in pistons, you're increasing the weight, you're increasing the mass, you're increasing the likelihood of something breaking.
Yeah. I mean, my ARs are the only guns I've ever had that were not piston driven.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
What is that Type 97? Is that Type 97 gas or piston?
I think it's piston.
I think it's piston too.
Yep.
Everything that seems to be built now is built with a piston instead of a gas tube, which I don't know. The gas system is not broken. Is it perfect? No, but the pistons aren't perfect either. The huge advantage to a piston, of course, is if you're a Navy SEAL and you're going to swim underwater.
That's
I don't think any of us are going to be swimming underwater with our AR-15s anytime soon. So... Yeah.
Not soon, no. I think a couple of years for me.
A couple of years, we'll go swimming in their air.
Yeah, maybe a couple of years.
So let's say we're on a fishing boat, we're shooting seals, and we fell in.
Right, and we wanted to shoot the great white that was about to eat us.
Exactly.
We'd be okay to do that with our piston-driven ARs. Yeah. But with our gas impingement ARs, not a good idea. You will blow up the gun.
That's right.
Just saying.
The other malfunctions that occur in an AR is, frankly, the bolts. There are gas rings on a bolt, which will wear out and cause reliability issues. So you can get like bolt rebuild kits. And sometimes the locking lugs on the bolt itself will break off.
Fortunately, bolt rebuild kits and bolts themselves are not terribly expensive. They can be had for,
You can get a whole second bolt carrier group to keep at home as a spare for often well under $200.
Right. And the parts kits to rebuild one is you know, a fraction of that. For those of you who don't know what the gas rings are, just if you're a mechanic at all and know what the piston rings in a engine are, it's the same thing. It's just a ring. There's three of them, and it's to help capture the gas so it doesn't leak past, just like it would do in a car.
Firing pins can also be a source of failure. again, something none of us have experienced. We don't run.
I think
our,
a lot of this, though, guys, like as a recreational shooter,
yeah,
that's you may own an AR for a lifetime and never have any of these problems.
Yeah, you're probably right, Owen. Yeah. Yeah.
But we've all run into handgun problems because we run our handguns competitively almost every weekend some years.
That's
if
right.
If we did the same with our ARs like Brian Bolivar over at Modern Rifleman Radio does, he sees ARs fail because he's surrounded by ARs every weekend.
Yeah.
He's had a couple of these malfunctions, but he's put a lot more ammo through his ARs than the three of us.
That's right. So if you're thinking about getting an AR for recreational purposes, we're not trying to scare you. This stuff probably won't happen to you, so don't worry about it. Sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say, I got an emergency parts kit. I forget exactly what it was called. It came out of Brownells. It's a spare parts kit. You just throw in the case with your AR, and it springs and pins and detents and a firing pin.
I was going to say, isn't that called a Daniel Defense Mark 18? Let's move on to the second email that we have referring to ARs, and then we're going to have to move on to our listener feedback because we are getting a little long in the tooth here. But
go ahead and take that one then, please.
All right, from Mike, he goes, "Hello, gentlemen. I have just purchased a stripped lower and will be building my first AR. I don't want to spend my life savings on it. If I did, I would have just bought a complete Colt. But I want some quality, hence why I didn't just get a Dominion Arms. How do you decide what brands and where to spend more money on your parts? Since you're on the path of stealing other shows' topics, maybe you could discuss some things in particular you think would make the perfect AR, but try not to take 4 episodes to do so." I think that's a zing at somebody, but we'll carry on. Then again, we know what Trevor will pick. He'll just pick his beloved brand, Norinco, switch out the grip for a new piece of wood. That sounds right. That's exactly what Trevor would do, I think.
Yeah, STI, NEA, and Daniel Defense.
And Matt would just pick out a 22 clone or conversion kit, and Owen, well, he's a bit of a mystery because we haven't heard much from him lately.
Uh-huh.
Can't wait for the next episode, and that comes to us from Mike. So let's start off with the first question, and Trevor, you just answered it, but let's answer it again. What are good quality name brands for people who want to start building? I mean, he's got a stripped lower. What kind of parts, what kind of name brands does he want to start looking at to put his lower together?
Well, it depends on if he wants an entry-level AR, of course, or a competition AR. But, I mean, the parts kits that I've
used... there's a bit of a... No, there's a third option there. It'd be a combat or duty rifle.
Right.
You don't have to have entry-level or competition. You could have a rugged rifle.
Yes.
Yeah, that's...
And so, I mean, when it comes to... First of all, the one thing that you don't want to skimp on, regardless of what you're going to use this rifle for, is your bolt carrier group. Your bolt carrier group is the heart of the rifle. That I would not go out of my way to purchase an Norinco bolt carrier group. All the ARs that I built with NEA bolt carrier groups because they're available, they're affordable, and I believe they're excellent quality. I've compared the NEA bolt carrier group. It's also a fully auto bolt carrier group. And I've compared it to the Daniel Defense bolt carrier group, the STI bolt carrier group, the DPMS, and the STAG, and put it up against any of them as far as fit and finish and quality of the parts and the way the bolts are staked in there and longevity. I mean, I've been running my NEA for 2 years.
Yep, something like that.
It's still kicking. It's still, you know. So with that in mind, because I've never had anything in that bolt carrier group fail in 2 years, and there's at least a couple of thousand rounds through that rifle. Probably closer to 4,000 rounds to that rifle. I would have no problem buying another one. They've got a coating on them, a nitrate finish or something like that. There's a lot of information actually on NEA's website about.
Let's send them to the NEA website and recommend again NEA for the bolt carrier group. What about Trigger?
Geisley.
Now, that's a competition trigger, I would
say. No, it's not. Geisley makes all kind of triggers from mil-spec 2-stage all the way up to competition.
Now, can you spell Geisley for him just so that he knows where to look because it's hard to spell?
No, I can't. Just do a Google on Geisley.
And, I think it's Geisley or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. Just spell Geisley whatever way you think it's spelled and put AR-15 trigger.
It'll pop
Google,
up. Yeah. Because everybody spells it a different way.
That's right. So, Geisley triggers because they make everything from mil-spec. Well, they don't make, they start at mil-spec. But anyway, Geisley for the trigger.
Guys late for the trigger. What about furniture? I guess that's personal preference.
No, that's Magpul. I don't care what you want.
Personal preference.
You want Magpul. No.
Magpul does make good stuff.
Yep.
Owen, do you have anything you want to add into this?
No.
Again, you've been quiet, so I'm just trying to draw you back into the conversation. Wake up there, buddy. You'll be fine.
Well, I had two or three comments, but they were kind of, not really worth mentioning, so...
I tell you, for lower parts kits, Brownells is your AR source.
Wait, you can buy U.S. stuff?
Yeah.
Ship it to Canada?
And very, very seldom do you have to do any paperwork, especially now that they've increased the ITAR number from like $100 to $500 or something. But DPMS, it'll get you going, right? The DPMS, they pretty much, I think, all the Brownell branded parts kits and whatnot or AR parts are DPMS, and I haven't had any failures. The triggers are mil-spec, horrible triggers, but...
One thing to watch out for when you're ordering buffer tube, if you're going to do that, there is a difference between commercial spec and mil-spec, so do double-check that you get both a mil-spec and a mil-spec stock or commercial spec buffer tube and commercial spec stock. So just make sure the stock and the buffer tube do match up because they are slightly different.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that I can think of, though. Everything else is 100% interchangeable.
Sights, Yankee Hill machine.
Yankee Hill makes great sights, yep. So does, what was the ones I got from
Diamond mine? Something. Oh, no, you've got...
I don't remember. Whatever, they're really cool.
I put, I don't know if I mentioned this.
The new Maples.
A Magpul Pros,
yeah,
on my NEA on my battle rifle, and they're really nice because they're not plastic. they're metal.
It's unusual for Magpul.
It's unusual for Magpul, but they're much lower profile. They sit extremely low. I want to say they're 3/8 of an inch off the.
Yeah, they're very very thin.
Top of the rail, and. They're narrower. They're not bulky. You know how plastic has to be bulky in order to make it stronger? Mm-hmm. These are not. So I'm very impressed with them.
Yeah,
they don't pop up like they don't pop up the same. You actually have to pull them up.
But. Right. Yeah, pop-up sights, for those people who are wondering why would you have pop-up sights on a rifle, well, most of the time you're going to run an optic, a red dot, or a low magnified scope. And what you do is you will run backup sights in case that optic fails or your scope breaks or whatever. And they're sights that they pop up, and they're iron sights.
Spring loaded.
Yep. Some of them are, and some of them you pull up like iron, or like Owen said. But yeah, it's basically your backup sights. And so you want to have those on there in case your optic fails. Now, if you're somebody who wants to run iron sights, you know, dedicated iron sights, get fixed iron sights. Don't get pop-up ones. They will be a bit more accurate because they're not moving around.
I concur. And the downside to the Magpul, the original ones, is that they're locked in place when they're at rest, but then when you pop them up, they pop up, but then they're not locked up. And if you drop the rifle or the rifle hits something, you can actually knock your sight back down and lock it down.
Yeah.
Where the Yankee Hill Machine QDS ones that I have, you hit the button and they pop up, but then they lock. You have to unlock them to close them.
Yep, which is a good feature.
Yeah.
Cool.
What else we got?
I was just going to say, let's talk really, really quick about what our perfect ARs would be, because that's what he wanted to hear. And then we need to get into listener feedback, because we're down to about 25 minutes, and we got lots of emails. So perfect AR for me, a 22 would be fantastic. Owen, what about you?
Oh, excuse me. Sorry. Just right in the middle of taking a drink. What was the question again?
Oh, what was your perfect AR?
The one I have.
Yeah. It is a good one. And I have to say mine
NEA
is...
NEA and 5.56.
Yeah. The one that I have, I don't even know what it is because none of... Well, I know what the lower is. That's it. It's a blue line. Everything else, I have no idea what the name brand is because, like I said, they all got donated. So most of them don't have name brand stamped into them. I got no idea what it is. But I like my rifle and I like it just the way it is. So I would say a lightweight AR. With a red dot and reliable pop-up sights and a bunch of good magazines and lots of ammo. Trevor?
I got to do two. I'll go quick.
You're special, so you go ahead and do two.
For CQB, my Mark 18 with EOTech, but not one of the 512s, one of the smaller, more compact ones.
Right.
If they become non-restricted, I definitely want something with an 18-inch barrel or 18.5-inch barrel chambered in 7.62 by 40.
That'd be cool. 7.62 by 40 is a 30 caliber bullet being seated into a 5.56 case, correct?
Yep. 5.56 by 45 case, trimmed down a couple of thou and or a couple of mil, and then neck to a 7.62 bullet.
Very nice. Yeah, that would be cool. That'd be great for bears.
Great for a lot of things, yeah.
Fantastic for bears, yeah. Not good for varmints, though. Not in New Brunswick. Stupid caliber restrictions.
Yeah.
All right, bring us into listener feedback.
All right, let's jump into some listener feedback.
Great job, Trevor.
Thank you, Matthew. Take the first one, Owen.
All right, this is from Jim, who says, you want to see some wild and crazy shooting stages, check out the Rocky Mountain 300. That's taking place next weekend in Colorado. There's a really good reason they call it the 300.
And this is where Matthew inserts, holy crap. I went and looked at some of the stage designs. We couldn't even do them here in Canada. We don't have enough magazines or bullets in our magazines to complete them. It's ridiculous.
Wow. What
it's awesome.
Sport
I want to
it?
Go play. Huh?
What sport is it?
USPSA, I think. I didn't really look very closely, but I think it is.
Okay, so they're longer courses of fire, more than
Well, it's I think it's six stages, and there's 300 rounds altogether.
Oh, okay, so they're kind of just doing their own thing.
Oh, it's huge, massive stages. Yeah, very cool. I want to go play.
Nice.
He continues to say, "I don't download via iTunes. I use IPP or Podcast Republic, whatever they call themselves. But if I did use iTunes, I would give you all 5 stars.
Aw. Yeah.
It's May 22nd, 2014, and Owen's bio is, well, you know, keep up the good work. I really enjoy the shows. I don't have a clue what he's talking about.
Your bio. You still haven't given me a bio update. So your bio still reads, oh, this is Owen's bio. He hasn't given me anything yet. He should really update this.
Nice. Oh.
And then I put down what the date was. Nah. And it's like last year.
It was last year.
Good job, buddy.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll add that to the bottom of my long list of things to do.
Yeah, it'll never get done. I'll write it for you eventually, and it'll be even funnier than it is now. And not a bit of it will be true.
All right. I'll grab the next one.
Of course.
Luke G says, sir, he asks if we have AK-47 vodka down here.
That's down here. I don't understand down here. Are we somewhere down?
Are we not from above him anymore? Are we in Australia?
I don't know. The AK-47 vodka looks interesting. It's a vodka called AK-47. I've never had it, but...
You had vodka out of a bullet once.
Out of a bullet, yep. But it wasn't an AK-47 bullet, so... No. I really don't know what to tell you, Luke. No, maybe?
We're not down really vodka here. Drinkers either.
From down here, we can't see from down here, maybe. I don't know. Thanks for your email, Luke. I guess that means I get the next one, huh?
Yep.
From Spencer. Hey, guys, just a quick follow-up on the stats you discussed last week. Ooh, this will be interesting. As you mentioned, the number of accidental deaths with firearms in the U.S. is tiny, and it's getting lower every year thanks to training groups like the NRA. While the media loves a story that makes gun owners look careless and stupid, in reality, the number of accidents with firearms is a minuscule percentage, far better than the percentage of car owners who have accidents. Good point. You talked about how a gun was more likely to hurt someone accidentally than it was to be used in self-defense. I've run into that assertion before, I won't call it a fact, and when I dug into it a bit, it turned out to depend on what was considered self-defense. The peer-reviewed studies out there have a pretty wide range of numbers when it comes to defensive gun use here in the U.S. An older study done for the National Institutes of Justice, part of the U.S. Justice Department, estimated up to 2 million uses per year, defensively that is. That was later revised down to 800,000 to 1.2 million after an extended battle over the author's statistical methods. That vetting process, what peer review is supposed to do, leaves us with this study as one of the best estimates of total defensive gun use. So that's between 800,000 and 1.2 million uses. Now, I do want to cut in here real quick and say we were talking about just home self-defense, not out and about, but I do like these stats anyway. The Cato Institute did a more restrictive study, which required the gun actually be drawn and displayed to prevent or break off an attack, and it came up with a number of 100,000 defensive gun uses a year. The so-called study was used as a basis for the claim you didn't mention either of those numbers. Instead, they looked at the number of justifiable homicides reached in a year. Okay, so I see what they did there. On the surface, you might think that it was a reasonable number, especially in Canada, where you simply wouldn't have a defensive shooting without it ending up in court, but things are a lot different here in the U.S. Anyone who listens to U.S. podcasts or read any of the U.S. gun magazines sees that in an obvious self-defense shooting, charges are rarely filed. So again, that makes sense. If the charge wasn't filed, how can you have a justifiable shooting? Because you can't come to that conclusion unless you've been charged with the crime, right? So I see why he's sort of upset that they use this number. In some anti-gun states, you may have charges filed, but then later dropped if the shooting is a clean self-defense situation. So again, those are going to skew the numbers. And of course, very few situations where a gun is drawn or displayed but not fired. Those don't end up in official records at all, even though those are perfectly valid self-defense situations and are the vast majority of defensive gun uses. In short, or long, yes, long, they could only get that ratio by whittling down the cases where guns were used for self-defense to a ridiculously low number. So, I like what you're saying. I like the numbers between 800,000 and 1.2 million. That sounds reasonable to me. I've always said that guns are used approximately a million times in the U.S. for self-defense purposes. And it turns out that I wasn't just making that number up. It comes from somewhere. So, yeah, guns are
Or you did just make it up. Just happened.
And I just happened to be right. I mean,
he made it up and got lucky.
That does happen from time to time, I will admit. But no, guns are very useful, like we mentioned last week. You know, yes, accidents happen with them, but more people die in cars, and cars are useful too, and so we keep cars around. It's the same thing with guns. Yes, accidents are going to happen. You lessen them, you mitigate the risk as best you can, but they're a useful tool. There's no reason why we should ever use somebody's accident to say, let's get rid of them all. You know, oh, if it saves one life, well, it doesn't. You'll lose a million lives, potentially, if you get rid of all the guns, because the guns are used over a million times in self-defense situations. So
maybe we just need to put seatbelts and airbags on our guns.
Oh, I like what you're doing there. Yep, that's a great idea. Anyway, Spencer has a PS here. He says, I'm seeing a lot of Ely 22 being sold here these days. It seems to be some of the only 22 ammo in stock, probably because it's really expensive. I've dealt with some 22 match ammo in the past, but it was always Norma or their Russian stuff, which was really pretty good. I recently saw a brick, 500 rounds, of Ely Club for about $85. Is that a reasonable price for it, or are they just taking advantage of the fact none of us here in the U.S. know the different Ely versions, what the different Ely versions should actually sell for? I don't know if that's a good price or not. I can tell you that I buy 500 rounds of 22 for about $20, so the 85 scares me.
Ain't none of us here silhouette shooters.
No.
Or biathlon shooters. Or
I can't tell you. I shoot bulk 22 ammo through all of my 22s. I do have a couple of like 50-round boxes of some really high-end stuff that I save for Jewel whenever Jewel wants to go out and do some serious plinking. But I shoot all bulk through my stuff. I would have no clue what the going rates of high-end 22 ammo would be. I'm sorry, I'm not that into 22, I guess. I thought I was. Guess I'm not.
You're into the cheap 22.
I'm into the cheap 22. And that being said, I'm starting to feel the pinch up here. I went to Fredericton, Woodstock, and Edmundston. Those are three of the larger cities in New Brunswick. I went to the Canadian Tire and Walmart in each one, which are the places where I get my bulk 22, and none of them had my brand, the Winchester bulk packs, all sold out.
I've been checking the Woodstock one pretty regular.
Yeah, we may be starting to feel the 22 pinch here.
Time to start hoarding.
It's too late. I've started that.
long time ago.
The thing is, I don't hoard it. It's that I like to stay stocked up, and I have been stocked up.
Matthew,
well,
how many rounds of 22 you got in the house right now?
I don't want to say the number out loud for fear of being lynched by the U.S.
Exactly.
But no, I always have this number in my house. I don't go out and, like, I didn't buy any. Even if I had seen any, I probably wouldn't have bought any. I don't need any more. It's just, I want to keep track of where it is and what sort of our stock is like here in Canada, and it's I think it's a little low, at least in this neck of the woods. So I think we need to start, I don't know what, making our own 22 ammo. Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's move on to this next email.
All right, where's the next one here from Manny? Hi all, still typing up my story from 2 weeks ago. It's long, that's why I haven't gotten it back to you yet. But before I make that story any longer with dumb questions, McClatchy, you and me need to have a talk, pal. You will hear my story that I bought a Marlin. You will hear my story that I bought a Marlin 795. I was on YouTube the other day and saw your Marlin Papoose review. In the video, you had a Pro Mag 25 rounder for it. When I bought my rifle, I could not find someone who sells them in Canada. The mags, not the rifle. Please, please, please tell me where you got yours, or if you love me enough, send me some. Six or so would do. But telling me where to get them works too. Keep an eye out for my story when I get around to typing it up. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Manny from Winnipeg.
Manny, you can go to High Caliber Services Corporation, Corp, I guess they call themselves. High Caliber Services Corp. HiCal.ca is the actual HICAL.ca. And they have ProMag Marlin 795. But you can buy them single or you can buy them three pack. So they have them and they're showing in stock right now. So
very
that's
good.
Where you can get them if you want to get them in Canada.
Cool. Now you know.
Three pack for $99.
It's a good price. I might have to pick up some more. Maybe I'll sell it or get them all there, Manny, before you. So maybe it's a race. Maybe you better hurry up. I'm just saying. I like to hoard 22 stuff, you know. All right, this next submission comes to us from Mark Price. And Mark, thank you so much for the Jib Jab e-card that you made up and sent to us that's now been posted on our Facebook page.
My wife even laughed, so that means it's funny.
Yeah, it was a hoot. So fantastic. He also did send this, and he said, this is a description of it. This is a glimpse of a future Slamfire radio show featuring Matthew, the blood clot McClatchy, Trevor, Forgot My Way Furlot, and Owen, the Sleeping Warrior Fluelling. I hope you like it.
Hey, Trevor, is your 1911 working right yet? It's a 2111. I only need to tweak 10 more parts, and I think I finally got it. What did you do with guns, Owen?
Yes, that is the future of Slamfire Radio, right there.
That was great. I laughed so hard when I heard that.
It's a 2111. Close enough, 2111. Right, Trevor? Trevor's insulted. He went away.
No, Trevor muted his mic because he's working on his 2011.
He's tweaking those last 10 parts to make it work right.
Yeah, no, it works great now. I had a recoil spring that was too light, so the cichlid rate was too high, and the brass didn't have time to leave the gun.
That would be a negative, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, then, if there are no shoutouts, why don't we jump into... No, shoutouts come after this. Why don't we jump into...
You're doing
the best,
great.
The best iTunes review. Matthew, what do you got this week?
We got one here from Bushman447, and he said, hey guys, just want to say I love the podcast. You guys do a great public service. The last episode, 56, was really educational. I would really appreciate more myth-busting episodes.
You know, we read this one already.
Did we read that one already?
Yep.
All right, then. Let's carry on with that's it. Yeah, I have. Sorry. So, okay. Nope. No new iTunes review this week.
But
carry
thanks
on.
For trying, Matthew. Thanks for oh, we have an old in one. The most recent one that we read.
We do have an old one, yes.
Yeah,
and I will read half of it, and then we'll move on, right. Which we've done. Okay.
All right. How about... we ask our listeners if they will join one or both of our National Firearms Associations. They are the NFA and the Canadian Shooting Sports Association, the CSSA. Join one or both and do your part to help the gun lobby do something for you. Also, be sure to check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada. Be sure to sign up if you're not a member of Gun Owners of Canada, because they put on cool giveaways every month. There was a Tavor last month. I don't know what's coming up in June, but Tavor in the month of May, maybe, and something different in June.
No, I think the Tavor is ongoing. It's to reach a member.
Oh, okay, cool. So well, they're giving away a Tavor.
Yeah, they're giving away a Tavor still. So go sign up to win a Tavor. And a Tavor is a cool rifle, just saying.
Definitely.
And it's non-restricted.
Accurate, man. I was at the range with Burns's.
Yeah, you told us a story. 200 yards clay pigeons. It's great.
I know. Crazy with a what's the second best optic out there?
Aimpoint.
Aimpoint, right. Yeah. With an aimpoint. Like us on Facebook.
We're going to get hate mail for that probably. A lot of people are dedicated Aimpoint fans.
If they want to invest their optic or their ego into an inferior optic, that's up to them.
It's their choice.
Yeah. That's their choice. They're allowed to be wrong.
They can do
Paul Furlot, I'm looking at you. And happy birthday, Paul Furlot. There, I got a shout out. Paul Furlot's birthday. So happy birthday, Paul Furlot. And let's see. What else? Like us on Facebook because 1,005 is not enough.
That's right.
Be sure to check out all the great shows on both the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network as well as the Crusader Podcast Network. Tons of great material on each. All right, that's the show for this week, guys. And remember, if women don't find you handsome, they should at least find you handy.
Remember, I'm pulling for you. We're all in this together.
Until next time, keep your stick on the ice.
I'm Red Green.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
So anyway.
So, I guess...
Really?
That was fantastic. Okay. I really hope I'm gonna say more in-depth things like that for the rest of the evening.
Yes, that's about what I'm going to do all evening. Well, guys, I don't know. I think that... Okay, I'm going to go get some guns. We're talking about ARs. I need to have a couple here, and I need to get my Glock because I have major... confusion and puzzlement in regards to my clock.
That's fantastic. Okay. Go get your stuff.
Okay.
Bye. All right, Trevor, ready to start?
Yeah?
Ready to start?
Yeah, I was ready to start at 9 when I wasn't even here.
I just figured it was funny. Owen left. We should start without him.
I get it.
Do you get it? Trevor said he wanted to wait another half hour before we started.
I will snap.
Why are you so uptight?
Just relax.
He can't. I tried it. I tried telling jokes and stuff. Hey, Trevor.
I know why you're so wound up. I really do. But
oh my god, I'm lead host. Okay, hit the record button.
It's been recording for some time.
Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 59 of Slam Fire Radio for May 30th, 2015. I'm the most pissed off host in the whole.
All right, there'll be a take two, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I wasn't really ready to start. Yeah, you were saying on?
I don't know.
That was funny. I totally made you lose your train of thought. I feel nothing.
Was I saying something?
You were, yeah. Because I said about a joke, and you said, Trevor, did you hear the one about?
Yeah, Trevor, why are you so uptight? And then you were like going to like say something profound. It almost sounded like.
No.
No. Let's be clear.
That doesn't sound like me at all.
Yeah. Ready?
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 59 of Slam Fire Radio. Nope.
No?
Nope.
No, it is 59 of Slam Fire Radio.
Welcome to Slam Fire Radio, episode 59. Yeah. Welcome to episode 59 of Slam Fire Radio.
Isn't that what you said?
Embarrassing. All right, here we go.
I'm pretty sure it is what you said. Hold on.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Owen's Ideas Suck, and he can mind his business.
Oh, it's going to be a good show.
It's not going to be fun editing, I will tell you that, but
ready, though.
It is fun.
Around.
Yeah. What about an iTunes review?
We don't have one.
Oh. Shoutouts?
Don't have any.
Why am I doing this when you're the lead host?
Because you just naturally take over. You've been doing it for the last 10 minutes.
Why don't you jump in here and stop me?
I don't have a chance. You just go. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Where am I picking it up from?
Wherever you like. Start with iTunes reviews if you want.
Trying to figure out how to quietly pound the takedown pin out of my 2011.
You can do it as loudly as you like right now.
Yeah, that's it. Christina might disagree with you.
She has every right to.
That she'll still be wrong.
And I will still be here, and she'll still be there.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll still be the one in trouble.
I don't like how this is working out at all.
I think it's great.
A young cowboy named Billy Joe grew restless on the farm. Boy filled with wanderlust who really meant no harm. He changed his clothes and shined his boots and combed his dark hair down. And his mother cried as he walked out. Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town. Laughed and kissed his mum and said, "You're Billy Joe's a man. Well, I can shoot as quick and straight as anybody can. But I wouldn't shoot without a cause, I'd gun nobody down." But she cried again as he rode away. "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." He sang a song as he rode along, his guns hung at his hips. He rode into a cattle town, a smile upon his lips. He stopped and walked into a bar and laid his money down. But his mother's words echoed again. "Now don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Now don't take your guns to town." Then to calm his shaken hand, he tried to tell himself at last he had become a man. A dusty cowpoke at his side began to laugh him down, and he heard again his mother's words. "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." Filled with rage, then Billy Joe reached for his gun to draw. But the stranger drew his gun and fired before he even saw. As Billy Joe fell to the floor, the crowd all gathered round and wondered at his final words. "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town."